Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, the Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. This is Nichols, joined in studios by Francois. Got it right this time. No Tim this week. Tim's off, busy with some work, and get out in time. But yeah, Francois, thanks for joining in.
Hey, you know, I'm happy to be back. It's getting a little bit colder outside, so, you know, hockey's right around the corner. And I've been chomping at the bit to get back in the studio with you. It's unfortunate Tim can't be here, but I'll try and bring my A game to make up for it.
What's up with you joining the studios? And there's some issue with Carey Price. Every time like you're in with us, it's like Halak gets traded, Carey Price gets booed in his first exhibition game. What's going on with that?
I think it's the Francophone karma, you know. But you know, I'm half French, so anything that has to do with a Francophone hockey market, I think there must be some sort of,
you got some bad juju going.
Yeah,
on.
It must be something going on there for sure, for sure.
So Carey Price let in 4 goals last night on 9 shots.
That's a good performance for him.
Booed after the first goal. Cheered as he got pulled after the fourth. Things are looking good in Montreal these days.
Well, I think we talked about this a little bit in one of our previous podcasts. And this whole Carey Price situation, I mean, this is not going to go away. And it's going to be kind of an interesting storyline to follow, because from a management standpoint, you figure that the safe decision is to go with Halak, because it seems like you know at least what you're going to get from him on a night-to-night basis. And in terms of trying to sell the decision to the fans, it's always easy to defend sticking with a guy that brought you to the conference finals, because fans don't really, or I should say the casual hockey fan, doesn't necessarily always understand the concept of the high upside goaltender, which is more likely to be Carey Price than Halak in that situation. So I think it'll be an interesting storyline to follow. And the success of Carey Price will probably be directly correlated with the length of Pierre Gauthier's tenure as general manager of the Montreal Canadiens.
Was that a backhanded slap at Bleeding Heart fans?
No, I don't think so. It wasn't intended, but if it was...
I agree with that sentiment a bit. I think Carey Price is probably in a market where he's his situation is kind of built to fail, right?
Yeah,
no. It just seems like nobody's rooting for him. You know, everybody's kind of looking forward to watching him fail. It's just a weird situation in Montreal. But as he noted in some of his comments today, this has been happening in that market for the past 50 years. Like, people get booed out of town there. It's not unlike many other Canadian cities.
Yeah, and especially in Montreal. You know, after all of those fans, I feel terribly for them, because we all know the Stanley Cup is their birthright. They've now gone 17 years, so since 1993, without a Stanley Cup. So, you know, I feel terrible for them. And the fact that Carey Price may not be the guy for the job is just, I just feel awful.
I think I would have traded him. I would have traded Price.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
some idiot GM is going to pay for the young upside.
Well, and the other
even
thing
he
is,
hasn't shown it.
And the other thing is, I think in arbitration, Price is still going to get would have still gotten the bigger salary figure than Halak.
You think so?
I think so.
I don't know if I
agree. It would have been close.
It was a weird situation, though, because they held on to, you know, they held on to Price, but he didn't have a contract yet.
Yeah.
Price had some interesting comments today in the paper, though. Have you heard any of his comments yet?
I think I heard some of them, but maybe if you sort of reread them, that would be helpful.
Here we go. This is his first one. Relax. Chill out. We've got lots of time. We're not winning the Stanley Cup in the first exhibition game. It wasn't a good performance, obviously. It's not how I plan things. I've never been one to back away from the challenge. It's just the way I am. I'm not going to cower away from anything. I'll just be myself and accept what it is I have to do. That's just the way it is here. It hasn't changed in the last 50 years, so I don't see why it's going to change in the next 50 days. It's part of the game here. There's nothing we can do about it but win games. Make it stop.
Thanks a lot for that, Captain Obvious.
I don't know what the fan's message was, but I don't think it's the correct way to go about things. Wherever I go in the city, people are very courteous. No one's ever going to come up and say, "You suck," to my face. I don't think anyone would ever do that. It's just when you get in a crowd, people are a lot more brave. Does that sound like a guy who loves the city that he plays in right
now?
No,
absolutely not. Absolutely not. And, you know, it's just, I mean, if we're trying to sort of draw parallels between the Jason Spezza situation that happened after the playoffs, which got the annual Jason Spezza trade rumor mill going, I think the issue here, or at least based on what I see out of Price's behavior or Price's disposition and Spezza's, is I don't think you can question Jason Spezza's work ethic or his desire to compete. I think he is fatally flawed with certain areas of his game, but I don't think that his desire to win is an issue. I think with Carey Price, you might be able to question some of that drive to want to really be an goaltender in the NHL. What do you think?
It's weird that you say that, because in the final goal that was scored by Patrice Bergeron last night, granted, it's a breakaway, and Price got beat, but he was deep in his crease, and if you watch the replays, it just looked like
he was Randy Mossing it.
After the first deke, he just, you know, it's just like he gave up. Like, you could just tell by his mannerisms when the puck was in, and you could just tell, like, that he looks defeated. He looks rattled, and it's just a situation where you look at that guy, and you can already assume that it's not going to end well in Montreal.
Yeah, he seems like one of these guys. Who can I compare him to? Like Lamar Odom of the Los Angeles Lakers. The talent is there. The tools are there. But sometimes it's just like one thing happens and he just mentally checks out of the game really early, really fast. And, you know, that's it. It's just...
Alexi Yashin had the same knock on him whenever he played in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I think Yashin is another classic case of a guy who just, like, if he wasn't feeling it within the first 5-10 minutes of the game,
he just
check out of the game right then and there. And I think there's Price may have some of those tendencies as well.
It didn't help that he had Shane Corson draped on his leg and couldn't shake him off.
Oh, yeah.
But that's when they didn't call penalties in the
Canadian Olympian Shane Corson.
Okay, so how about we go from Montreal's goaltending controversy to a little controversy here in Ottawa. After Robin Lehner posted a 5-0 shutout win in the first exhibition game.
Against the Toronto Marlies?
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go. Toronto did have a better lineup, I think, on paper that night. But Lehner was impressive in his first game. Brian Elliott, not so much in the first period last night. Corey Clouston has kind of left the door open, saying if Lehner has a strong camp, he has an opportunity to make this team. And it's going to come down to Brian Murray making that decision as to what's best for the organization. How do you feel about that?
Well, personally, I'm from everything I've heard from Robin Lehner, I am a big fan. I think there's a lot of upside there. I think that the shutout, regardless of the quality of the lineup that Leafs were icing that night, is definitely a positive sign. But I do think he's still probably somewhat of a project. And I think from a coaching standpoint, it's probably more a vote of confidence on the part of Corey Clouston to try and really encourage the kid to work hard, keep the work ethic up. But I definitely think that we see flashes if Robin Lehner continues to develop this way.
I think it's also a bit of a motivational tactic to inspire maybe LeClaire or Elliott. I know those are both two players who are up for contract at the end of this season, and you're not going to bring both guys back next year.
The reality is you may not bring any of them back. So both of them may not be back, and much less one.
And depending on how well maybe LeClaire starts this season, is that a guy you move halfway through if Lehner's shining down in the AHL? It gives the organization a lot of flexibility if Lehner's having a good year.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, I think he's about 6'3 or something like that. So he's a big guy. He has the pedigree, and it's nice to see that a 5-0 shutout, he's making the saves. That's positive. But in terms of his chances of making the team, at least this early in the season, I would say under 50%.
Yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical as well. I think it's just it's a nice water cooler discussion. But yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Plus, we got Mike Brodeur, man. He was 3-0 last year. He's gold.
I will say that the fact that Robin Lehner at this point, probably a lot earlier than expected, is actually somewhat in the discussion, whether it's on the periphery or not, is an encouraging sign.
I was listening to Brian Lee talk on Team 1200 before coming into the studios, and one of the things that he mentioned was how he went beyond Lehner's competitive gamesmanship. He was talking about how he came into camp prepared. He was one of the most physically fit guys during the training sessions, strength and conditioning sessions. So this guy came to prove something. The rave reviews that we're getting right now, it can only bode well for the future. You'd hate to see him fizzle out as like another overhyped Ottawa Center goaltending prospect, but everything's looking good going forward. And one of the things I've also noticed in this training camp is the depth of the organization at every position.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. It's nice to see that we're not only stockpiling the system again with some young players, but players that appear to have a certain level of talent, you know, guys that are going to be more than just those fourth line injury call up depth guys. So I think that is a positive sign as well. Definitely. It's nice to see.
Francois, for those of you who are listening at home, I just held up a sign that said Jim O'Brien.
I actually, funny story about Jim O'Brien, just very quick tangent. When the World Juniors were in Ottawa, I received free tickets to the U.S. Czech Republic game. Jim O'Brien was just, I mean, he's nowhere to be seen on the, I mean, he.
That's not very nice.
Well, I mean, come on.
That's your tangent?
It's just, I guess, you brought up the name and it brought back these horrible memories of you know, going to a World Junior game, hoping to see this guy that was, you know, fairly skilled hockey player.
So whenever you hear his name, you think back to this one game where he was a no-show?
Yeah, and also it was interesting because at that game, Scotty Bowman was sitting directly behind me. And Van Riemsdyk went in on a breakaway and tried to pull like that Jeremy Roenick one-handed deke and didn't score. And then Bowman was like, that's a hot dog move.
Oh, get the old school. Get the old school in there. That's awesome.
Yeah, him and Don Maloney, they were talking shop.
One thing that I've noticed, I know most of my attention for the preseason has kind of gone towards watching guys like Bobby Butler, Mike Hoffman, a few other players of note, like guys like Patrick Wierkosz and the sorts who came into their orientation rookie tournament and kind of got some rave reviews for their play, but I haven't really noticed them too much. So the one thing that really bodes well for me this season is we're not rushing the kids. And for the first time in years, it seems like we have the depth at every position where we don't have to force people into the lineup just for the sake that we don't have anyone good enough to play. And the fact that guys like Nick Foligno and Jesse Winchester have stepped up and have played their best hockey that I've seen ever in the first two exhibition games really bodes well, I think, for this season.
I think the only thing, I mean, not to put a damper on it, but I think the only thing in regards to a lot of these kids is that we have to contain the optimism a little bit, because I don't think you could say that the ceiling on any one of these guys is anything beyond that of the average NHL second liner. They are talented. They're more talented than a lot of the youth we've grown accustomed to seeing in our organization. But I question whether a lot of these guys really have that legitimate ability to become first-line NHL stars.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. But what I was getting at is that Ottawa doesn't have to sign a guy like a Jason Smith or a Randy Brobetye, who's just a veteran stopgap until someone's ready to play.
Yeah,
and for the first time in years, we have inexpensive talent on the third and fourth lines, who, you know, it saves your cap space, invaluable cap space.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. So along those lines, you know, watching the kids play in some of the preseason games, we are now 1-1 in the preseason, and to the extent that the preseason is any accurate measurement of what we might expect from this Ottawa Senators team this year, have you given some thought, Graham, to where we might end up in the standings and which teams might concern you the most that didn't finish in that didn't make the playoffs last year and are probably looking like they could be a threat to move into that top eight?
Carolina, because they're always one of those yo-yo teams, I find. That'll be out of the playoffs one year and then they'll make some surprise jump up to maybe like a fifth or sixth seed. And Cam Ward wasn't really healthy last year, and he wasn't really right during the regular season. So I think that's maybe a team that could make things interesting. Whether or not they have the scoring depth to contend for anything remains to be seen. But do you think the Islanders are there yet? Like, they have holes on their blue line.
No, I don't think the Islanders are there yet.
Tampa Bay is good discussion fodder.
I think I like Tampa Bay. I like Carolina, and I like Tampa Bay.
You've been drinking the Stevie Yzerman.
No, it has nothing to do with Steve Yzerman. Huge Steve Yzerman fan as a player. Not necessarily, you know, we don't really know what he can do as a GM yet. But Tampa's, they're not looking half bad. And, I mean, they have two legitimate scoring lines. Mind you, a lot of that depends on Simo Gagné being able to notch somewhere in between 20 and 30 goals this year. And like you pointed out earlier, the defense might be a little bit thin. But weak division. Aside from Washington, from Washington. So, I mean, there's a team, if you get hot in the Southeast Division, you might look pretty good in terms of making the top eight.
Yeah, if you sweep, you'd have to sweep Atlanta and Florida, obviously, but that's not...
That's doable. That's not the toughest thing in the world.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people are giving credit to New Jersey for what reason. Retaining Kovalchuk, they let Paul Martin go, and they brought in Volchenkov and Tatlander on defense. I wonder if that's a team that might slide out for the first time in a while.
I wouldn't be surprised either way. The real issue I have is what's going on with Parise, because they gave the huge contract to Kovalchuk. I assume they've planned for that properly. I mean, Lamoriello, I think, is, in my opinion, one of, if not the best general manager in hockey in terms of, you know, managing his payroll properly and stuff like that. But I don't think Kovalchuk makes them significantly better, and tying up that kind of money in that guy. It seems like the type of team that if things start to go bad, they will continue to snowball in a bad direction.
How would you like to be the guy in that locker room earning $2 to $3 million, and you're on that cap casualty bubble where you might be spending time in the AHL riding the buses because the Devils just signed Ilya Kovalchuk?
Yeah.
How would you like to be that guy?
I don't think I'd like it very much.
But at least you're getting a couple $1 million, right?
But, I mean, the one thing about the Devils is they're usually very well coached. It's a very well-run organization.
Minus Sutter's time there.
Yeah. But even he got them turned around. They were one of the hottest teams going into the playoffs the one year he was a head coach there. So I think in terms of a team that could slide out, I question how long Buffalo will be able to ride the Ryan Miller gravy train into the playoffs on a year-to-year basis.
That's what I was saying last week. You weren't here, obviously. But yeah, if that guy has any regression whatsoever to revert to like his career norms, that's a team that's, what, they finished seventh last year? Sixth or seventh, maybe? Like, that's a team that could easily slide out of the playoffs if he doesn't play well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's no... It's a bunch of 50-point guys across the board. Save for Vanek, who I think is infinitely talented, but he's just—I mean, he has no one to play with. So,
and I think they lost their they lost Tolinder, obviously.
Yeah,
we mentioned him earlier, and I believe they lost Lidman as well.
Yes,
so they lost their first pairing defense and replaced them with Jordan Leopold and
Tyler. Tyler Myers will probably play on the first pair this year,
right?
But even then,
you know. I look at Jordan Leopold as a step down.
Rangers, huge wild card, could go either way.
I don't know if they can score enough. I know they brought in a couple guys.
They have the goaltending. I mean, they could go either way. Philly, goaltending issues. Mm-hmm. I think they're good enough to make it, though.
Yeah.
The Zaretsev situation will be interesting to follow.
And what about Montreal?
I think they're out. I don't think they get in.
The weird thing about that team, though, is the number of injuries that they did have last year was staggering. Like, Kemmler was out for a while.
Markov's out again this year. And if Carey Price... I mean, they were able to lean very heavily on Halak down the stretch, too.
In fairness to Price, though, his peripheral numbers were very, very similar to Halak's, but the team didn't give him any goal support.
Yeah.
So I know you don't really want to get in that whole how valuable is a win kind of thing as a goaltender, but if he doesn't perform well, like, that's a team that could really get behind the eight ball early.
And it's a team that executed a system to perfection in the playoffs. So a lot of people, you know, I would not, having been a Senators fan before who has seen Jacques Martin through perfect execution of a system get a lot out of mid-caliber to low-caliber talent. Montreal's in our division, so I think we're a top eight. I think we're a better team than Montreal. I think Boston's a better team than Montreal. And to a certain extent, because Buffalo has a track record, and I'm not a Lindy Ruff fan, but he seems to get a lot of mileage out of those teams. So Montreal, I think, is anywhere between the third or fourth best team in our division.
Don Cherry picked us to make the playoffs again. He didn't buy into the whole Hockey News hype?
No.
That was a report that came out this
week. Yeah, I think anywhere between 6 and 10, my expectation is playoffs. I think six is the realistic top end, and I think 10 is the worst case scenario. Both from a not making the playoffs and getting a mid round,
but that seems to be the general consensus, right? Like, yeah, everybody views Ottawa as a playoff bubble team. There's so many things that could go wrong for this organization this year, whether it's the goaltending, veterans coming off injury. If one of Ottawa's best defensemen get hurt, who's going to replace that depth? Like, Philip Kubo's already out, right? So, I mean, can Brian Lee step up and play regular 6 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, that's the issue, right?
Is Jared Cowan going to play? A number of questions have to be answered before the end of this training camp. You're shaking your head.
It's just, no, I mean, I think you're...
It's tough.
I think you're right. There's, for some reason, even though there haven't been that many changes on paper on the roster, I feel like there are a lot of question marks. A lot of things need to go right for us to make the playoffs, I feel like.
Maybe. Something happened last year as well, though. Like,
Spezza got hurt.
Spezza got hurt.
Yeah.
Kovalev was, you know, he just wasn't there in the second half of last season. Mike Fisher disappeared for the last, 20 games of the regular season?
Yeah, and I mean, now, if Gonchar stays healthy, the Gonchar health question, I think, is one that's better left alone, but...
That's the problem with the whole Eastern Conference, though. Every team has those question marks.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's just a matter of, like, dominoes. Everything has to fall in place for certain teams to make the playoffs. I think the line between a good team in the Eastern Conference and a team that's out of the playoffs is very, very thin. I don't think Ottawa's going to be a bad team, per se, or Montreal or Buffalo. Like, I think those are all... They're competitive teams. It's just, I just don't think the line between like a third place team in the East and a 10th place team in the East is that, there's not a huge discrepancy.
Yeah, I think what you see is in the West, there's a clear separation between, say, the top six and the rest. And the top six are very good. And the top six in the West are arguably better than every other team in the East, save for Pittsburgh and Washington. And in the East, I think it's a lot tighter. I think there's not really any, besides Pittsburgh and Washington, there's not a whole lot of clear separation between teams after that.
I agree. Well, now that training camp's underway, we kind of have an idea of who's going to be on whose roster. We mentioned New Jersey earlier. They made a number of moves. They added Volchenkov and Kovalchuk. Joining us on the program next is going to be the agent for both of those players. So how about when we come back after break, we'll have Jay Grossman on the line.
Sounds great.
All right, we'll be right back.
Welcome back, Sens fans. This is the Sixth Sens podcast. We are now joined by hockey super agent Jay Grossman. How are you, Jay?
Great, Francois. Nice to be with you guys again.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to have you.
Long summer, but ready for some hockey.
Yeah, along the lines of that long summer, I guess it's safe to assume you're not doing your groceries with food stamps these days.
Well, you know, obviously we had a productive summer, but, you know, at the same time, when you're just, as you know, I think players are when they're on the ice, when you're doing your job and you've got things that play out over a long period of time, you know, you've got to remain focused and you've got to worry about the task at hand, and you know, you can't think about things like that when you're trying to execute and get things done for your players. So we're happy with it, and like I said, we're also excited to get to see the guys in action now that the season is about to start.
Jay, in your opinion, what was it that set the Kovalchuk contract apart from others of that variety that the league chose to let go?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know that I have the answer. You know, I obviously the arbitrator ruled in favor of the league at the hearing. He felt that the allocation of the money in the later years was such that it was unrealistic for the player to have the desire or want to play for that level of compensation. We obviously disagreed. We strongly disagreed, and Ilya testified at the hearing that he was comfortable with playing that length of time. And you know, we were surprised on our end. We had no inkling whatsoever that the league was going to reject the contract until really the day of the press conference, or right at that time. And you know, it proved to be a long summer, obviously going through that arbitration, and then, you know, taking a fairly significant period of time to work with the Devils to submit another contract, which, you know, we thought again was you know, our best shot at getting something to the league satisfaction. And then obviously them deciding to sort of step in and address the issues with the other players that you mentioned.
So Jay, just a follow-up question on that. We'll take you back a little bit. And the NHL basically avoids a contract through arbitration. At that point, how optimistic were you that a deal could still get done to the satisfaction of Ilya and the Devils? Or at that point, were you sort of mystified as to, or I guess you and the Devils mystified as to how to move forward from there?
Well, no, I think that the contact, the dialogue remained open at all times between us and New Jersey. And, you know, we knew what the possibilities were, what existed if we were going to perhaps lose the case. And like I said, we worked hard with them after that to come up with something that that we felt we could, you know, we could arrange that would be satisfactory to all the parties. It certainly, the arbitration decision created some limitations on what it was that we could do. You know, the point in terms of, again, what we were trying to accomplish was also, I think even though it didn't seem so from the outside, it was made easier by the fact that Ilya was really determined at that point to really strictly negotiate with the Devils. And like I said, from the outside, it looked like it took a long time, or a lot longer time than maybe it should have or could have. But there were a lot of issues to sort through, and ultimately the key was that the Devils and Ilya maintained their conviction to get this done.
Jay, I've noticed a lot of veterans are coming into training camps on PTOs, trying to play for contracts. And I was just curious, for a player of Ilya's caliber and the kind of figure that he was looking for, was it difficult to find a market for him this summer?
Well, I think it's a good question, because you really sort of put in parentheses the issue of the dynamic of free agency in a cap system. And, you know, this is something that the players were, was expressed very clearly to the players, that a cap system would create a situation where, you know, the superstars would be, you know, on one level, and then you would have a lot of players who would be fighting for contracts at the league minimum or something in that area. You've got a lot of players, you know, free agents and weren't able to secure jobs in the off season. And, you know, at the same time, I think for us in free agency, even though obviously you might not have free agency at age 27 in a non-cap system, the fact is that, yeah, there were limitations on how many clubs were going to take a look at the type of long-term you know, deal and aggregate dollar deal that we were looking at.
And along those lines, Jay, how much, because, you know, this summer you arguably had the top two most coveted free agents on the entire market. So to what extent do you take it upon yourself to sort of develop or create the market for these players? Or how much of it is really the teams coming to you and sort of setting that initial expectation as to how much you think you may be able to, or what type of contract you may be able to get for your client?
Well, there's a couple things I'd want to say about that. First of all, you know, if there's communication between a player and a club to get a deal done prior to July 1, one of the other, you know, I think very marketable free agents that we had, who we signed at the trade deadline last year, was Pekka Rinne, with Nashville, their number one goaltender. And you know, I think first and foremost, and obviously with Kovalchuk, we had pretty extensive discussions with Atlanta, which didn't result in a contract. So I think you've got to, you know, first evaluate where you are with the team that the player is playing for, and make a determination. Sometimes it's a difficult determination because you don't know what's going to be there on July 1, and you've got to use your experience, your guidance, and also the player's thoughts and feelings as to where you want to go, going, you know, moving forward. Obviously, a player who signs prior to July 1, you know, there's perhaps the feeling that, you know, I know what I'm getting and I'm not going to take the risk of going into the market. I think you saw some guys that were, frankly, not very happy that they turned down some deals that they didn't see, you know, later on. Conversely, in our situation, you know, people said, you know, when we moved past the situation in Atlanta, they said, you know, you'll never see that money again. And quite frankly, they were wrong. So I think you've got to, you know, you've got to evaluate that. The other thing is that I think we had a pretty good experience for the first time, you know, using social media and other outlets to get some things out in the hockey world about our players and things that maybe people didn't know about our clients. You know, in each case it was different. I mean, Kovalchuk was playing in an environment in Atlanta where obviously his notice as a player has risen quite substantially. Obviously after the trade to New Jersey and then, you know, with the free agent situation that developed. But, you know, I think, you know, obviously the situation we had with Anton Volchenkov was one where, you know, a lot of people, you know, took a lot of notice of what he could do and, you know, where he would be as a player. And, you know, that was another... you know, instance of you know, perhaps a little bit of a change in the environment of what it is that we do in the off season, in addition to preparing our players for free agency.
Jay, you mentioned social media and how you've kind of embraced that. Last time I talked to you, you came on the program, and we appreciated having you on at that time. And one of the things that I kind of had a perception that. Well, I left the studios that night thinking, you know, Ottawa had a reasonable chance to retain Anton Volchenkov's talent. I'm just curious, to what timeline could you maybe let our listeners know, at what point did you kind of have that feeling that Volchenkov probably wasn't coming back to Ottawa last season?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with their approach to the situation. I mean, we went into the season, and again, obviously, the three players I mentioned, you know, Kovalchuk, Volchenkov, and Rinne, we thought that at each position, obviously, in, you know, far different situations and far different histories with their clubs and so forth and so on, but in reality, at each position, they were the best available player. And I think with Anton, you know, we felt that's where he was, and we felt that, you know, going into free agency, he was going to command a pretty sizable contract, if not the most sizable, for defensemen on the open market. And I think that, you know, throughout the process, it's safe to say that though we had open lines of communication, you know, I think the Sens, you know, I think they recognize that, but I think, you know, the way it was expressed to me by Brian Murray is that, you know, is that they were not necessarily going to be a cap team and not necessarily going to be in a position to, you know, to afford to pay the kind of money that we thought we could get in the open market for Anton. And, you know, ultimately I think they decided to, you know, really go in a completely different direction with Sergei Gonchar and the kind of player he is, versus the kind of player Anton is. I don't know that was their, you know, apples to apples comparison, so to speak, but that was their decision in the end. And, you know, Anton really liked it in Ottawa. He, as a matter of fact, I'm watching their first exhibition game with New Jersey. This is the first game he's playing in the NHL, or technically an exhibition game, but the first game not in a Sens uniform. And, you know, I he still has a home in Ottawa. He really enjoyed his run there. You know, it's fair to say that if we had had more substantial negotiations, that I think he would have very well considered, you know, a contract to return there. And that's not meant to be a criticism of the Ottawa organization in any way. You know, clubs have to make decisions on players all the time. Free agency is a big part of what the NHL is in this current system. And we certainly don't begrudge it or look at it in any kind of personal sense.
Now, Jay, obviously both guys end up in New Jersey this summer. And myself, I'm a fairly big Lou Lamoriello fan in terms of, I think he really understands, you know, how to operate in the cap reality and whatnot. Without asking you to go into too much detail about him, could you just speak to, you know, he seems like he really understands. So could you just speak to how much you may have enjoyed sort of negotiating with Lou Lamoriello and working in collaboration with him, especially on the Kovalchuk deal, but also on the Volchenkov deal?
Well, you know, I think that it's a sort of a complex answer in certain sense. I've dealt with Lou and worked with Lou for, you know, 25 years now that he's been a GM and that I've been an agent representing players. And we've had a lot of dealings over the years, and I think for the most part they've worked out well. We've worked with a variety of different types of players, and you know, I've seen and respected the way, you know, they've developed players within their organization and certain things that they, you know, that they've done. And you know, I at the same time, I think that, you know, you're talking about a system, the cap system, that's completely different. And I would say that I got a completely different view of how Lou was going, you know, about his off-season decisions because of the cap and what they needed to do. And, you know, he certainly didn't let me in on all their decision-making within their organization by any means. But, you know, he expressed to me certain thoughts. I didn't ask him certain questions that even though maybe we had the right to ask him based upon the players that we were dealing with, that I just didn't feel comfortable, because I knew that he was very well on top of those issues. So there were things that I didn't ask him that I might have asked other GMs. But it was really interesting to get a view. Obviously, they have not had the playoff success over the last 3 years that they would like. And it was interesting, very interesting to me to see how he was going to, you know, how he was going to retool the team for this season. And like I said, I got a view of that I hadn't seen before. And I really respected, you know, his thought process, what he was trying to accomplish. I think that he could have gone in a variety of different directions in this offseason. And the moves that he chose to make, I think, put them in an excellent position to not only have the playoff success they want, but perhaps even, you know, go as far as you can go.
Jay, during the course of the Kovalchuk negotiations, a number of mainstream publications reported that the threat of a potential Kovalchuk exodus to the KHL existed. As an agent for some Russian players, is the leverage associated with a potential KHL departure, is it overstated?
No, I wouldn't say it's overstated at all. I think it's a really good option for a number of players. As a matter of fact, you know, what you guys mentioned, you know, at the start of the show in terms of the number of free agents that are in camp and who are, you know, on tryouts, You know, if conversely they could nail, I mean, we signed a player just this past week who was, you know, a player who had a pretty good NHL career, probably on most situations that he played in was as a fifth, sixth defenseman or depth defenseman. And, you know, he's being paid $1 million tax-free for each of the next two seasons. I mean, you know, I don't begrudge him at all, and I think, in fact, it's a benefit to him to have that option versus going into training camp with that complete uncertainty. So I think it's a real, you know, it's a definite reality. I don't think it's as much of the head-to-head leverage as you may think it is. I've very much have had the situation where teams, NHL general managers have been, you know, genuinely happy for, you know, players that they've liked who have had that opportunity to go on and continue their careers and make, you know, make a very good living playing in the KHL. Players who, other players who are at the end of their career, you know, who can continue. So I think it's a real option for players to consider. Anton did not consider the KHL really at all. You know, Kovalchuk was in a situation where I think, you know, had the NHL continued to, you know, and again, whether this was personal or not personal, if it had continued to go on for another 2 or 3 weeks beyond when it did, you know, I think he would have given that some serious consideration. Definitely.
All right, Jay. So as an agent, you've had to operate in a salary cap league for the past few seasons now. And we just wanted to get a sense of if you can think of one way in which the cap may have made some aspect of your job easier, and then maybe one way in which the cap may have made some aspect a little bit more challenging.
Well, you know, look, I don't think that you necessarily can predict your spots, or, you know, 5 years ago could have said, okay, well, this is the way we'd like our clientele or client base to look like, but clearly, you know, we've valued, you know, representing quality players over quantity. And, you know, we'd like to think that we have, you know, a number of, you know, higher end players who are in a situation where, given the nature of free agency, you know, they're able to benefit from the marketplace as opposed to the ones that you see that have been hurt by the marketplace. Now, you know, obviously, if a player has a bad year or an off year, he could still be a good player and have a tough time getting a contract. So we're not naive to that, and we understand it very well. And we've been in that situation before. You know, it doesn't leave you with a good feeling because you, generally speaking, do believe in your player, and especially if he has done it before. You know, it's a hard thing to swallow if he's, you know, marginalized or pushed out of the league because of age or because of the cap, those types of issues. So, you know, I think we have benefited in the sense that there's been, you know, a shift in dollars to some of those higher end players. But I don't think we take any great, you know, feeling in that, in the sense that, you know, if it means other players that we might represent down the road are going to have a tough time getting a job, then, again, you've got to look at it from all angles. And I think, you know, the other thing, I mean, we've represented a few goalies that have gone through free agency in the last few summers, and if you look at that market in particular, that's been a really, you know, really difficult environment for those players.
Jay, now that Anton's gone, on behalf of the listeners and Francois and I and Tim, who isn't here, we just wanted to kind of convey the message that even though Anton left for New Jersey, that we really appreciated all his hard work and effort that he's put in, all the sweat, blood, and tears that have gone into his career here in Ottawa. And thank you again for embracing the coming on our podcast for the second time. We really appreciate it, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot, Jake.
Yeah, no, I thank you guys for having me, and, you know, with respect to Anton, like I said, you know, I think he had a great run there. I think it was a great entry into his career because he played very meaningful games in a Sens uniform, particularly in the playoffs. And as you guys well know, when he steps on the ice, he gives you, you know, 110, 115, whatever you want to, you know, whatever percent you want to come up with, you know, you're going to get the maximum effort out of a guy like him. And, you know, I'm sure that he harbors no ill feeling towards anyone there. He's got a lot of friends, and except for when he's playing against them, hopes that, you know, the guys do well. Obviously, had a great run with Chris Phillips, and like I said, you know, wishes everyone there in the organization. They treated him with enormous respect. So I thank you guys again for having me on. I enjoy the work that you do and follow it closely, and hope you guys have an enjoyable season as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Jay.
Great. Thanks a lot. Seems like the only way out's through the back. The taxi cab has run away. Yeah, I gotta go now, honey. Who? What is the name of the man you choose? I'm never gonna break your heart. Not unless I have to.
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. That interview was good. Got some clarification on some issues revolving around Kovalchuk, the CBA, Anton Volchenkov. I was a bit surprised. Well, he wasn't very candid in his comments about Volchenkov. He didn't let us know when Volchenkov kind of knew that he wasn't going to be returning in the Senators uniform for the season.
No, but I mean, I don't blame him. I can totally understand that, right? Because
he tiptoed around it very well.
I think in terms of the Ottawa fan base, Anton Volchenkov left in very good standing, and no one holds it against him for leaving. So I didn't expect him to tell us. But I think, you know, if you read between the lines, there are certain key things that were said there that still do offer insight as to sometimes how the negotiation process unfolds and, you know, whether the player will stay with his current team or not.
If you had to hedge a bet, though, what do you think it was? Probably the term, you know, right? I think the money was probably all right, but it was probably the term that scared the Senators off.
I think so.
Six years is a long time for a stay-at-home defenseman.
Yeah, I think I'm not plugged into the NHL at all. I don't think Ottawa was prepared to go longer than four. I think five was what the market was saying. I think Ottawa wanted him to take maybe a year less to stay here, and I think New Jersey added on the sixth to put it over the top and make him go there as opposed
to what Ottawa did with Gonchar.
Yeah.
Give him the third year.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a fair point. They're the cap space. Not anymore, though.
No.
But off the air, I was talking with Grossman, and I think what we're going to do, listeners, is we're going to feature kind of a contact form similar to what we have right now. What I'm going to ask you to do is email us in your favorite Volchenkov moment and in a Senator's uniform or whatever. I know Francois is a little bit different. But yeah, if you could email us in your favorite Volchenkov moment from when he was here, we're going to collect them all and then we're going to send them off to Jay, who's going to ensure that they get to Anton. So if you have any sentiments, feel free to send them in. You have anything to say? You're nodding your head?
No, I'm
smiling away.
I think you've done a very good job of pretty much wrapping up the show. I have nothing to add.
You could always boot Carey Price. good way to close it. So that wraps it up for another week of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Thanks, listeners, for checking us out. You can follow Jay Grossman on Twitter. We're going to throw that link up as well. We'll post the link to his agency's blog. And yeah, enjoy the preseason. Enjoy tomorrow night's game in Montreal. And check us out next week. Take care. Later.